Hey, everybody, welcome to another absolutely glorious, that was aggressive, glorious episode of Jeff Has Cool Friends. I am Jeff May, and I have cool friends with me on this very special episode. I have one of my very, very cool friends, an incredible comedian, an incredible cook slash chef. I don't know if I can call you a chef. Is that like a thing? I don't know. We'll get to that. And fantastic writer, Danny Palumbo. Danny, how you doing, bud?
Hey, I'm good. You know what, man? I am cool. I am cool.
You are. You are. I'm going to be honest. I have friends that aren't cool. I'm not going to put them. I'm not going to put them on this show.
There's no. I like that baked into the title of your podcast is a compliment. I like that.
Yeah, it's how I get people to come on.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, I know I'm cool, right, and if I think you're cool, that should be a hell of a thing.
It's like you are cool, aren't you? And they're like, yeah. Of course I'll do the podcast because I'm cool.
You know, what's funny is I came up with the name of this podcast almost immediately. Like it snapped. And that to me is actually very scary because I'm like, what if this name sucks? And I'm a stupid idiot. And I was like high on the idea and then later, but like, I think it's a great title for a pod.
I agree, and I will tell you that I had the same fears about my own podcast, but I think they were founded. I called my food podcast the Macaroni Zone, and I think it's probably a bad name for a podcast, but I like it still. I still like it.
It's very frustrating for me that macaroni and zone are so close to rhyming. It's like you're edging a rhyme, and that would be very frustrating for me. Because Macaroni Zoni now sounds like a kid's restaurant in the 70s.
It sounds like a kid's restaurant or a club. I like that it might sound like some political pundit's show. Like, this is Rush Limbaugh, and you're listening to the Macaroni Zone.
But like an Italian politics podcast?
For 100%. They're talking about what's not pizza all day.
Oh, I love, you know, what's funny is this is I've pulled you on to this show because like, obviously two comedians talking on a podcast, I don't know if anybody has it aware of this, it's been done. And you are a comedian. You're a very, very great comedian. And we're going to talk about that, but I actually am bringing you on here to talk about food.
Great.
Because you know the most about food of people I know.
Well, that's very flattering. Thank you.
No, I just don't know anybody.
I don't know anybody. No, you're my only friend.
Yeah, you're the only one I know that has anything to do with food. Everybody else eats out of everything is packaged.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, I appreciate that. And I feel like I've carved a little spot out for myself as, you know, the comedian who does know things about, I don't even know things about food, but like, I don't know. I consider myself like a food writer. And that's what I do for money.
Yeah. I would hope you'd consider yourself that because it's how you pay your bills.
It's how I pay my bills. And I also do comedy, but I love it when people bring me on the podcast or even corner me at a comedy show to talk about food. I love it. It's one of my favorite things to do. So it's a nice little life.
You know why? It's because when comedians talk about comedy, it sucks and it's boring.
Yeah. That's very true.
Like every time comedians are just like, yeah, but we talk about Bill Burr, dude. And it's just like, do you have any other dimensions to life? Like, is your set about stand up?
That's a good point, man. It gets frustrating. And I feel like most comics have at least one other thing that they end up leaning into at some point, unless they're complete psychopaths, in which case they get very successful at stand up and that's their whole thing.
Yeah. That is the thing. It's like, once you hit a certain point in time into comedy where you're like, oh, I'm not paying my bills with stand up, which is, everyone. There's like 9 people that pay their rent with stand-up. And it's not rent. Yeah. It's usually a mortgage by then because they're wealthy and they've been doing it for a while. So it is funny to see like when people lean into the thing that it's like, all right, well, I'll do this.
Well, I will also say, I think it happens to a lot of people out in Los Angeles. because New York is more about the stand-up grind. And, you know, when people come to Los Angeles, you know, they want, you usually have hopes of acting or whatever, but like, you know, stand-up isn't everything out here. And so you kind of have freedom to be leaning into other things, which is great, I think.
Of course. It's funny because we met obviously at a stand-up show. It was when there are different stand-up shows that sort of exist in the Los Angeles scene. And a quick little inside baseball for those of you listening. There are club shows and clubs where comedians go to hang out desperately hoping they get seen by a booker. It's not my preferred way of doing stand-up. It's in my opinion, and it's not to say that it's either right or wrong, it seems very sycophantic to sort of just hope you get seen as a person and so they'll let you do jokes for 5 minutes. That doesn't work for me. You know, if you hang out on the patio of the Comedy Store for 2 years, we might give you a 5 minute set in the original room. And I'm just like, that doesn't sound like comedy to me. That sounds like
Doesn't sound like fun.
No, but then there's this other sort of pocket of shows, which are like comedy shows that comedians put on that are almost mostly for either other comedians and then poor unsuspecting people at a bar or restaurant that didn't know comedy was happening. And we met at one of those shows and you were phenomenally funny.
Thanks, buddy.
To the point where I contacted my co-producer of my stand-up show Mint on Card, and I said, I found somebody, you are going to love him, and I booked you, I think, later that night. I was like, do you want to do my show?
You know, when that happened, it really made me think like, the process works. Where there was a lot of times it feels like you're banging your head against the wall and you're doing things right and you don't get rewarded, but you know, it's like how things should work. You go have a good set, a friend sees it, and they book you on their show. There's not like four or five extra hoops you have to jump through like you were talking about.
There's also like, there's a fame aspect to booking stand-up that I don't necessarily buy into, where if somebody is like famous, then that's who you want on your show. We got very lucky with Mint on Card. For those of you that are not familiar, Mint on Card was a live stand-up show that I did in a vintage toy and comic book store, which is very of my brand, that we ended up cultivating a fan base that are fans of just the concept of our show. So it didn't. What mattered more than here's a famous person is here's a funny person. And that, I think, we got very lucky working to cultivate that, not to pat myself on the back. I think a lot of that was done by Blast from the Past and sort of them being a cool venue and us getting like the food truck and stuff like that. But you were one of those people where I was like, this is a person who is going to elevate our show. This is a person that will hopefully get fans from our fans. Like, that's what I love. I love sharing. I love sharing fans with people. And that's why I do shows where I highlight the people that I like. Because I'm a fan of yours. And we'll talk about that because you released an album last year.
Yes.
Called Good Morning, Mister.
Yes.
And it's awkward to say out loud to people because sometimes like you don't want to make it weird. It's my favorite comedy album of last year.
Wow. Thanks, man.
Like, go ahead.
That means a lot. And it, you know, it was another one of those instances where I was like, things are working. You know, the idea that it was well received among people I respect and people found it. And, you know, just the culmination of several years in comedy and laying it down, and the crowd was great and the final product was something I was happy with. I mean, you don't get too many of those in stand-up. You know what I'm saying? Like, even if you're famous, how many specials do you put out in your lifetime? How many hour-long things do you end up putting out? So to see that much work put into something and have it end up being good was really, and still is, something I'm very proud of and a cool moment.
There's definitely, you know, I've said that before, but like in comedy and especially in people that decide to get into this world, that like there are so many different levels and layers of anxiety and self-doubt. You know, the amount of self-doubt that exists in a group of people that want to stand in front of people and talk is wild. And I'm I'm of that way where I'm like, well, what if I submit an album? What if I release an album and it's not that good? What if I think I'm better than I am? And I put out this album when it's not ready and people listen to it and it just becomes another one of these average albums that's like somebody gets to say, oh, I was number one on iTunes for eight minutes before Jim Gaffigan takes it back.
Yeah.
So like there is, it's scary. So.
Yeah. I think I got to a point to where I stopped worrying about that. I always had confidence in the material. I just wanted it to go well. I tried recording. First of all, that was my last set before COVID. So I got it at the last minute in Austin, Texas. But I also tried to record it a year before that, maybe 10 months before that. And it was at a different venue and it just didn't go well. I felt good about the material, but it just didn't go how I wanted it to. What am I even doing?
What was the crowd? Very ugly?
Yes.
They were an unattractive crowd? Because that'll throw me off.
A very crowd. We did two shows, which was a mistake. And the first show was super light, but I nailed it. And then the second show was packed, but they were just like bad. And it was in this weird improv theater. I wanted it to be a small space, but something just didn't click. And after a half hour on stage, I was just like, this isn't it. And I said goodbye. And I didn't even really say goodbye to any comedians. I just went right to a bar and I started drinking and I just started going, what is the point of any of this? I should quit comedy. I was talking about quitting for a while afterwards until I started to kind of have fun again. And then I was having a lot of fun and then COVID happened.
You know, it's funny. I very recently did my first set back after a year and change.
How'd it feel?
Terrible. And I'm going to tell you why. I went to an organized open mic, which was the biggest mistake of my life.
Yes.
I went to this organized open mic and the guy running it was old and bad.
Yeah.
And when I went up, like he left the light on. I apologize for those of you listening. The light is when you know you have 1 or 2 minutes left to perform and they flash a light at you and it's your, hey, heads up, you're almost done sort of thing. And so that is a very important part of the performing aspect of it because it lets you know how to pace, where to go with your joke and blah, blah, blah. He didn't do that for me. And then it was on and then off and then eventually back on again. And I was like, I don't know what is going on with this. Yes. It's very distracting. I don't have my time here. And I'm also trying to dust off material that needs work because I needed to get the rust off and it didn't happen. And I got off stage and there were people that I knew that were there and they were like, good set. And I was like, don't.
Right.
I was like, don't do that. It wasn't a good set. It was a bad set. And I needed that bad set so I can continue to build myself up to the good sets.
Yes.
But there is, like, I've never told another comedian that they had a good set when it was not good.
You know what I got recently that I think is relatable and honest and very funny. I went to Austin to do shows last month. They weren't my first shows back, but they were some of the first shows back. Mm-hmm. And my first set in Austin was not good.
No.
I just didn't have a good time. And other people could tell that I didn't have a good time. And nobody told me good set, but the comics to kind of acknowledge what happened and also that they like me still, they just put a hand on my back. Not even so much as like, hey, it's okay. It's sort of like, hey, you were up there.
Yeah, you did the thing, which is
100%, which I would appreciate more than good set, which is just like, hey, buddy,
that means you were on your phone.
Yeah.
Maybe.
But I think they saw.
Yeah.
I think they saw it and they could hear, you know,
I love there's something about bombing on stage that is very funny to me, when it's happening because it's frustrating, but it's also like from it's very zen in the idea that you're like, well, this will be done and into the ether in 8 minutes, 10 minutes, 40 minutes, whatever it is.
I would say that if it's funny to you, then you're not actually bombing. Bombing is, to me, is like you let the crowd get to you.
Oh, no, no. That happens. Like it happens and I get frustrated. But in that frustration, it snaps to the none of this matters. Okay. And this job is stupid. And that is that sort of feeling. And I am very much a reactive stand up. I do my best work when I get to tag my own jokes in the moment.
Yeah.
Which doesn't mean I don't write. Like that would be late. You know, you see these comics that just want to wing it on stage all the time.
Yeah.
Like, no, that's not it. But I need a reactive audience. And so also doing an open mic at like a third tier club, all the comics are just sitting there on their phones waiting. You know, they're not laughing.
It doesn't do anything for me.
Yeah.
I can go say new things for sure. But yeah, the value of a reactive crowd is amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, you get to tag things. That's how you write new jokes. I can't, you know, or that's how you write, you know, new bits to a joke, tags.
That's how you build it. You build your set by living in the moment. People ask that a lot.
You're right. A reactive crowd is great for that. You know, it's just a quiet, indifferent crowd, which a lot of open mics are. It makes it hard to get anything done.
Yeah, I would rather have a rude crowd than a crowd that's not doing anything.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm going to take a moment real quick because I want to give a shout out to the producers on the Patreon that I have, patreon.com/Jeff May. If you are listening on the Patreon, well, you might know some of these people. If you are listening for free across the internet, just so you know, you can go to patreon.com/Jeff May and you can get early uncensored episodes of this. That's right. All the curses aren't bleeped out on the Patreon. Sorry, children. I want to shout out to my first batch of producers, first and foremost, Tim McCouga, Bart Fartigan, Jennifer Fendelander. And also, by the way, Danny, you can react to any of these names. The most well-prepared dead guy, DaveyFrancis.com. I didn't kill my wife. God, it feels so good. Adrienne, Kelly Stanaway, Silius Ruby, Steven, Dr. DNA, Burrito Mouth, Twitch.
Who's Dr. DNA?
Well, Dr. DNA, I guess, is Mr. DNA from Jurassic Park, but he went to grad school.
Got it.
I'm going to guess. Or it's That's a guy, right. Or it's a really disturbing serial killer, and I don't want to know more about that.
Yeah, it's a Dexter villain.
Yeah, that's right. And we don't want to know what he does with the DNA. this one's fun. Twitch.tv/firechild460. See, that's exactly how you should be using these sponsorships. Promote your own shit. Jeff May can go straight to Lisa Harden, my co-producer on Mint on Card. Huey, Taurus Bulba, Mind Freak 555. Cody, currently suing Billy over name theft Beck. @Gavin_not. Jessica Robertson, Captain Fat Strong. We've all been there. Gregarious Gregorio, the AV Foundry. Andrew doesn't
That's a good one.
Which one?
Gregarious
Gregorio. Oh, that's a great name.
That's a good one.
Oh,
that's a great
one. The alliteration goes four letters deep, and that is a great move. It's definitely different to the macaroni zoni.
Which we should have.
Andrew doesn't even like sports. Left Grayman of the Fireside Chronicles. I get Gandalf vibes the whole time on that one.
Yeah.
Ricky Cilantro @NerdNumbers. Mackenzie Chill. William Defoe's baffling big bonanza.
Ricky Cilantro is my NASCAR name.
I like it. I like it. I love that. I love those names. Yeah, I that would make sense. Are you a cilantro guy?
I am a cilantro guy.
Good, because we're going to talk about that in a second.
Yeah, right.
What would say what you were going to say?
Oh, I like food aliases. My brother came up with one: Pecorino Marino.
Hey,
which I think is a good one. Tony Rigatoni.
Tony Rigatoni, yeah.
Pecorino Marino is really good. Mm. That's a perfect one.
It's so nice, huh?
Yeah.
Dan Hackroyd, Murph the Murph. Danny, show me in the rules where it says a dog can't play basketball. Russell Richardson's Twitter, at Hello TARDIS. Sophia Hapgood, the ghost of Dave Thomas. Shebrew Sleeps, Norm from Cheers. Vortispin, Normal Man Andrew McGuire, Jolly Buckaroo, and of course, Dill Havarti, my favorite cheese personally.
Nice.
What's your favorite cheese?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, Pecorino cheese is good. Pecorino Romano, you know, that's a really good cheese. That is up there. And maybe something like, man, I like a good Brie or a good Camembert, you know, a nice gooey French cheese. That's up there.
Do you, when you eat Brie, do you eat the rind?
Yeah.
I do too. Is that weird?
Yeah, you're supposed to.
Okay. Because I like the end rind, where it's like you're eating mostly the rind. I'm like, oh yeah, that's good stuff.
I eat the whole thing.
I like a baked brie with apples. That's a damn delight to me.
That's a classic.
Brie is one of those cheeses that you don't know you had too much until it's too late.
Yeah. That can really sit. It's hard to quit too, because it's just so gooey.
It is very good. Are you, when you do brie, do you do it in like a charcuterie thing, or do you do it more on crackers?
Charcuterie, you know, kind of rarely, you know, I find myself just eating hunks of brie by itself.
Yeah, I get that.
Without charcuterie. I mean, if I'm at home and I have brie cheese, that's 100% what I'm doing.
You can eat it like a slice of pizza.
Basically.
Yeah.
I just have a little snack of brie cheese.
That's good. Wonderful. Yeah, for me, I definitely have to be very aware of what I'm eating and portion it out ahead of time when it comes to stuff like that. Or else
I'll just rip through it.
Yeah, and then like what I rip through will rip through me. Like,
yeah,
there's only so much brie you can put in your body.
Yeah. I mean, this is mostly why I don't keep the stuff in the house. Candy, alcohol, big wheels of brie cheese. None of it's gonna last too long. So I try to keep things pretty light as far as the snacks go.
If you were to make a charcuterie board of like 5 things, what would you put on it? Look at that.
That's a good question.
Yeah. Well, you're a food guy, so I want to know these things. Like, by the way, I'm also asking for every question I ask you that seems open-ended about your opinion is actually me asking advice from you. Yeah.
Okay. So something like a brie or a camembert.
Okay.
You need some sort of cracker, so cracker or like toast points, you know, maybe even like thinly sliced baguettes that are toasted up real nice.
Oh, like the stuff you make with like a bruschetta?
Basically, I like those. I mean, crackers are good, but I don't know, like a nice...
But that's such a generic term, crackers.
Yeah.
Like what is it, a Triscuit, a Wheat Thin?
Oh, well, I love Triscuits. I wouldn't put them on a charcuterie. If I had the option, I wouldn't put them on a charcuterie board, because I'd probably go over, you know, some sort of baked bread, like a baguette or something. Okay. Got to have a good pickle of some kind, maybe some sort of...
You got to be specific on that pickle. We talking bread and butter? We talking dill?
Yeah.
Sweet, half sour?
I would say dill, but like a homemade sort of dill pickle, or some sort of... mushroom conserva, which is like, it tastes a little pickly and it's like submerged in olive oil. I think that's really good. And then
so like right now we have like your brie, your toast,
yes,
your pickle.
We have a fourth thing, don't we? Okay, duck prosciutto. Duck is very fatty. And prosciutto is a nice salty cure. I duck prosciutto is so good. I would put duck prosciutto on there, and then a fifth. I got another. The Serrano ham, the stuff that comes from Portugal from black Iberian pigs.
Okay.
It's really fatty ham. So a good ham, a cured duck, the mushrooms, the bread, and the really fatty brie. Cheese, I think that's a good one. That's like low. That's like gluttonous. That's going very gluttonous.
That's full savory too. It's all going to attack the same part of your tongue there.
The conserva should have a little vinaigrette. You probably would like a pickle on there. But if the mushrooms are a little vinaigrette, I think that's going to get some nice tartness. No sweets, because if I did do sweet, maybe like a fig or something.
I was going to wonder about a fig or a dried apricot.
I don't need sweet on a charcuterie board.
Okay. That's good to know.
And you would still have like a grain mustard or something doesn't count. You'd have a spread.
That's a spread or a dip. That's fine. Yeah. I get that. It'd be funny if you were just like, and number five, a Snickers.
Just
a sliced up Snickers bar. Just to spread out all artfully.
A little bowl of Skittles.
Yeah.
Just right in the middle.
You roll the ham around them. You know?
Just that's gross.
Just a ham and Skittle confit.
Just disgusting.
No, that's great. We like that. Back to comedy because I jumped ahead. I jump all over because my brain is a prison.
Yeah.
So that's exciting. So you recorded the album. It was released last year. It was recorded. You recorded it in Austin.
Yes.
So now you sort of got your notoriety as a comedian in Austin, even though you are a Pittsburgh of origin.
Yes.
In Pittsburgh. Then to Austin, then to LA. You have done Just for Laughs in Montreal. So you are a man of the continent, it says here.
It says here.
In your autobiography.
I think about this a lot. It's just like, I lived in Pennsylvania, and then I gradually just kept going west. And then I think that maybe things might gradually lead me back at some point also. I think so. I feel very much out of water in Los Angeles. I mean, I felt that way in Austin too. But the whole time I was living in Austin, I was like, isn't this crazy? Why am I in Texas? The whole time I thought that.
I feel that way a lot about Los Angeles.
Right.
But I like it so much more than like, I mean, where I'm from, it's very homogenized.
Yes. And Austin can be that way too. And Pennsylvania is mostly that way. But I think the thing I'm slowly starting to realize is that if I ever do move out of LA, and I think that I'm probably not going to die here unless it was a tragedy.
You're going to.
I'll tell you right now, you will die. If I do live in a place that, let's say, is slightly homogenized in that way, because how do you get more culture than New York or LA? You kind of don't in America. I'll still come here to visit a lot and travel and be able to do all those different things. But as it stands right now, it's like living in a place as diverse as Los Angeles is like important to me.
I like it here only because I'm pretty sure I almost became a libertarian. I think it would have been very easy for me. Like I look back at a lot of the ways that I thought about stuff and it was like thinking I was very progressive, but also being like, yeah, but don't do dumb things and you won't get bothered by the police. Like kind of stuff stuff that had a very limited scope of like, my like white guy brain in like a white town in like the woods and farmlands of Massachusetts.
Sure.
There wasn't a lot of like room for having like true empathy because I didn't know anybody or I didn't experience other people.
When you grow up in a place like that, you know, even if you're not, let's say, horribly racist,
which you are,
it still takes a lot of work to like grow because you grew up in the farmland and you know, not one person of color went to my high school. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, I hear that. The good old days, as we like to call them.
Yeah. I grew up near Amish people. It was always going to take a long time, I feel like, for me to become want to say cultured, but like truly empathetic and tolerant and, you know, accepting of different lifestyles and cultures in a way that's like genuine, you know, like that was always going to take longer for me.
Yeah. It was one of those things where like, I think about like thinking that I was pretty progressive at the time. And then I think back at like a lot of the beliefs I had and I was like, no, you just thought you were like, you, because you voted for Obama or something like that. Like,
right.
Like, look, I like progress.
And I tolerated a lot of ignorance. So
to where
if it happens now, I don't give a shit. I'll speak my mind to you. You know what I'm saying? Where it's like, and that took a while for me to get there.
It's uncomfortable to call out.
Yeah.
Especially if it's people you know.
Yeah.
But like, I think last year did a lot for me because I really lost it last year. Like I got like really mad at people, you know, all this shit going on. And now it's just like, oh, I don't owe you anything because we were in geography together 22 years ago.
Right.
You. You're a piece of shit.
Right.
Grow up.
Right.
Meanwhile, I'm arguing with on the internet and I'm like, grow up.
Yeah.
You poop head.
Meanwhile, yeah. It's the most childish form of discourse there is.
Yeah. And I'm like, you need to know
the internet.
You need to know how important it is. I think the internet was a mistake. The internet, we gave it a try and I think we blew it.
Well, I'm slowly backing out. Not of everything, but you know, I don't have Facebook. I haven't had that for a couple of years, and I'm off Twitter.
Yeah, you deleted your Twitter.
I deleted my Twitter, which is the hard one for comedians to depart from. But my thinking was, if there was some insane benefit to my career through Twitter, I probably would have seen it by now. I feel like I've got enough. I don't think I need it, and I don't think it's ever going to be the thing that like puts me over the hump as a comic or a food writer or whatever. So just get rid of it and see what it's like. And it's interesting. My brain, I don't know if it's healing or if it has genuinely made me happier, but I notice bad tendencies, like having a thought and being like, it just immediately need to pull out your phone. I'm like, what am I doing that for? Just like keeping thoughts in is new for me.
Yeah, it's like a return. It's like, it's like Twitter was this weird sort of like fever dream that we lived in. It's our sort of like sane elsewhere where we're like, Twitter is just some snow globe in some kid's hand imagining that.
Right. But it's also, I'm sure some people, you know, it's easier for them to have it.
I mean,
they can still maintain a good sense of self and they don't lose themselves in things. And, but like for me, is I could tell that was happening. So I was like, I gotta get out of here.
You know, it's for me, it's one of those things where it's like, I should get rid of it, but it's so important to me to get people to hear like my dates that I'm going to or my projects. But the other part about that too, is like, I do some bag Star Wars joke and I'll get like, you know, couple hundred likes or whatever. But I'll share like, hey, I just released this very important podcast that's like going to keep me alive. And we get like 8 likes. And I'm just like, why? I don't understand that aspect of it. Like, do you think you don't have to listen to it to just like the tweet?
Yeah. Twitter sort of punishes self-promotion in that way.
I think I grew up being told to be humble. That was like a big part of it, was like humility. And you can't do that if you do this for a job. You can't be, you have to believe in yourself and promote yourself. And I feel gross every time, especially running a Patreon. Like doing a Patreon, I feel like a idiot. So I'm like, you want to give me some money? I can speak into the microphone.
Yeah.
You guys want that?
Well, you know, part of it is asking for what we're worth, which comedians are not really conditioned to do. You know, we do things for free constantly. And even diving into other parts of my life, like food writing and cooking and stuff like that. I've gotten better at asking for things and being like, I deserve it. Pay me more money for the thing, you know?
I want to then do a shift about the food aspect of that too, because I want to talk a lot about your food world. I am going to do just one more little read off of a list of sponsors. I think it's technically producers. I do the thing. If you're a $10 a month patron, you get me. I say your name on here. That's the whole thing. And did I undervalue that? Yes, of course I did. This was I feel like this should have been a higher cost, but that's fine. I'm all right with it. If I have to pimp myself out for a dime at a time for 100 people, it's fine. So shout out to Exploding Runes, JK, Jeff May's biggest fan, Foshizless Jones, David Knife Boot Hinson, Funky J. Spoiler alert, that's me.
It's not me.
Wouldn't that be sad if I just like promoted my like my own thing?
Yeah, these are all your aliases.
Yeah, Jeff is handsome. Let's see. Saint Gut Free, Instagrams at Bob_of_skull, Mike Gouts, Grumblebee, Cronenberger, No Lan Ma Tin, Miguel Acuna. These Seven Bees, Lemming Malloy, Kool-Aid Molotov, Superman Family, issue number 184, Chairface Chippendale, the unbeatable combo of Ryu and War Machine in Marvel vs. Capcom 2. Did you ever play that game?
No.
Marvel vs. Capcom 2, when they mixed all the characters together?
Oh, that's cool.
Venom fighting Mega Man and
Ooh, that's awesome.
I'll take that. I'm the law, martial law, and I hate superheroes. Lemming Malloy, Billy, no last name available. I don't care if it's women's deodorant. It works better and smells nicer. I appreciate and respect that. We're not going to feminize deodorant here. If it smells good, it smells good. I used to have a, my like cologne of choice was like an oil and it was like a vanilla and sandalwood. And I dated a woman that told me that I couldn't wear it because it smelled like I was having an affair.
Wow.
And I was like, yeah. Okay.
Vanilla and wood.
And sandalwood, yeah.
I don't even know what that would smell like.
It smells great, by the way. It
sounds like you smell like a candle at that point.
Next time I see you, I'm going to smash my wrist under your nose so you can smell it.
Thanks, buddy.
Scoundrel, Kimble, the fully vaccinated task goblin. Get vaccinated, you chuckleheads. The 5G lets you see sound, and then you can go see your friends again. Let's go. I'm going to have to charge extra for that name. There's a lot going on there. Blackagar Boltagon, Big Booty Boy, 42069.
Nice.
That's me. Russell from Jersey, Pizza, Bagels, Taylor Ham. What's Taylor Ham?
Taylor Ham? That's a good question.
You're basically from New Jersey, right?
I'm not. Not even. I mean, rural Pennsylvania is a lot like it.
Aren't they touching?
Yes, but Western Pennsylvania is so far away from Eastern Pennsylvania. It's like 5 hours away. Taylor Ham's a pork roll. That's right.
Look at that. Fancy. Bold and Brash. More like belongs in the trash. Mef J. Hey, wait a second. Hi, I'm Super Fudge, and welcome to Fudgemania. Craft beers make my alcoholism look like a neat little hobby. Jez Butt, the Ian McClendon, L, save the best for last, Seldo, and Connor, no nickname given, Benson. Yeah, I didn't save the best for last, El Seldo. Sorry. Second best. And so those are the patrons at the $10 level at patreon.com/ Jeff May. Again, no pressure. You don't have to join, but you could. I'd be cool with it. We could be friends on there. It's great. I stopped at Harrisburg on my way when I moved out here. That was my first stop.
Oh, interesting.
And it was, sad.
Yeah. I don't know much about Harrisburg. It is the capital of Pennsylvania, right?
I don't know. What do you think? Do you think I have a degree in social studies or something like that?
I believe that it is, but that's the middle of the state is, a little depressing.
I mean,
it's Harrisburg. The capital's Harrisburg.
Wow, look at that. Yeah, I stopped there because when I moved, I was moving out and I was driving and I had all these spots and I needed this place to stay. So I stopped at a motel in Harrisburg. I didn't bring in all my shit that was in my car. I'm so surprised I didn't get my car just robbed. I had so much stuff in my car.
Yeah, I find myself, sometimes I'll go to my car in the morning on the street in Los Angeles. This has happened like a dozen times where I'm like, how did I leave my window the whole way down? How is my car still here? How is there nothing gone? That happens a lot. I'm gonna get jacked eventually.
Dude, I got my car broken into, and the guy, he took nothing.
Nothing.
And I felt,
that's always a bummer.
I felt so bad for him.
Yeah.
Because I was like, man, you.
Yeah.
I was like, my sunglasses are nothing to you.
Yeah. You've got poor judgment two times over. One, you're stealing from cars, and two, you can't even pick a good car.
Yeah.
Give it up.
You picked a Ford Focus to rob. What do you think? Why? What's your deal here? Yeah. I always have this weird fantasy that I'm going to find somebody that is doing it to me.
Yes.
And my old fantasy would have been like street justice.
Yeah. That's definitely your fantasy.
And now my fantasy is like, hey man, can I get you something to eat or something? You look pretty desperate. Like that's how much they've changed, is me being like, what can I do to make it so that you don't have to do this?
Yeah.
And then when
if he declines, then you beat the living out of him.
Oh, just not even. Even if he accepts, it's all just a way to disarm.
Yeah.
And then I just give him the old 1-2, little salt and pepper, you know, a little thunder and lightning coming right at him.
The salt is giving him a sandwich and the pepper is your left hook.
Yeah. A little spice on it. you are a fantastic cook. You sell pasta on Sundays.
Yeah.
You independently, privately, secretly.
Yes.
Hashtag IRS. No. But you make a great, I was actually just speaking to another comedian, Joanne Schinderly, about your penne bolognese.
Oh, cool.
And we both decided it's a damn delight.
That's great. So thanks, man.
Tell me about how you got so into cooking, like that it became such an important part of your life.
Part of my life. Well, I mean, I know that I started working in restaurants when I was 15. And I was washing dishes and I was like, this sucks. And I would, you know, because you're the last person out of there. I'm like 16 or 15 years old and it's like New Year's Eve and I'm the last person in the restaurant. And I'm like, this sucks. I feel like I want to be partying. And then I realized like, oh, line cooks have a cooler job and they leave earlier than the dishwasher. Like they seemed cool. And so I just eventually, there was an opening and I asked to learn how to cook at this restaurant. And they taught me, you know, how to cook like Italian American food, and, you know, prepping and you know, the basics of like the basics of everything. And it stuck pretty well. And then that was my trade for a long time. And then I think I also started to realize too, oh, that's right. Like growing up, like my family would make pasta and, you know, I think I always had an interest in it. So yeah, I mean, part of it's family and the other part is just like, you know, you're at a job and you want to get promoted. And so what do? You have to learn something else. So
this is going to transition then to your sort of writing about food, which is incredible. You write about food a way that I wish I could write about anything.
Thanks, buddy.
You'll do reviews on your Instagram of local spots. You talk about you've written a lot of like travel food articles, I guess is the best. Yeah. You went on a cruise, is that right?
Yeah, I went to Portugal on a Viking cruise and it was free. The whole thing was free. I couldn't from the flight to the cruise itself. I mean, it was, and I was still broke when I came back. I like had no money when I did this, but I mean, I had to just because it was free. It's led me to do some cool and interesting things. And I guess I just like kind of decided like, cause I, you know, in college and my 20s and stuff, I was idolizing a lot of writers, obviously loved Bourdain. And then, you know, the stuff that he was reading and that he liked, I would also read and it turned me on to other chefs and authors. And I always liked food writing. And I think after doing comedy for a while, I just sort of realized like, okay, I can talk well. I know that. I can speak.
You can mix those two things too.
For sure. And maybe it's not necessarily comedy and food, but it's, you know, learning how to speak and say things in a thoughtful manner, and combining that with food, I just started to realize like, oh, I could do this for sure and do it pretty well. And so that's like why I started doing it. It just felt logical. Yeah.
How long did it take for you to start getting paid work to do that? Cause it doesn't seem like you could do it right away. Right.
Well, I wrote a couple things. I didn't do it until I was moved to Los Angeles. I was just like frustrated with comedy here, and because I was used to doing more of it. And so I had free time, and I was like, man, I started writing blog posts on my website. And then I started submitting things to the paper in Austin, who I had a good relationship with, the Austin Chronicle. And they let me write a couple things that I wanted to write. And then I used that as a sample to just, I started getting paid immediately. Damn. But it didn't, it wasn't a lot up top. I mean, it's still not a lot, but it pays my rent basically now. And that is through having, building relationships over a couple of years. Like I've written for this person, and you start acquiring emails and meeting different people, and you have good samples, and it takes, you really have to start from like kind of nothing and build it up.
There is something to be said about like having a career, for example, in comedy, where you have to start from nothing and build it up.
Yeah.
And then when you're like, well, this isn't fully going the way that it's planned, or it's not the, my original plan, things are diverting. And then you have to start from another thing, sort of from the bottom. I mean, certainly you have other skills that build that skill set up, but you're right. Like getting into interview, it is not the same as being like a guest on a comedy podcast. It's such a different world, and the amount of research that you have to do and
I kind of saw it too as like I was learning how to write well, and they were still paying me to do it. I mean, I look at stuff that I wrote even a year ago, and I'm like, that could have been a lot better. And but people are paying you, it's almost like if someone paid you to do open mics, which is ridiculous. It also made me realize just how undervalued comedy is. The idea that I could be paid to be getting better as a writer, and that it was also something that people felt was in demand, I thought was the complete opposite of comedy. But I'm thankful that it's part of what I do now. It's fun to do, it's cool, and it's definitely, I'm realizing like, I think maybe the goal was always to do something like this. I mean, I grew up idolizing Bourdain, not Louis C.K. There weren't like comedians that I really looked up to with a whole lot of reverence growing up. I liked comedy, but like, I think it was always like, I like Anthony Bourdain or like chefs on the Food Network and stuff. And like, I idolized those people. And I think maybe the goal was always to kind of like, I would like to have a food show one day. Or kind of following the same footsteps of writing about food and seeing what happens. And comedy kind of feels like maybe, I don't know what the purpose is for everything, but maybe the purpose for that is training for that, to be affable and to be humorous and to be good at being on camera, stuff like that,
You should have a food show. I think that
buddy.
That'd be great. That would be something. Let's see. Is anybody here a producer of food shows? If so, hit Danny up on Twitter only.
Ricky Cilantro, you work for the Food Network?
Yeah.
Help me out, brother.
He's like, it's actually cilantro kills me. So that's why I picked the name. It's like Batman. It's the thing I fear the most. That's why I put it in my name.
Oh, yes. Oh, that's very funny.
Because you travel a lot, you eat at places. So I want to know like a couple of things. First off, like what are your favorite restaurants across the country? Let me say this, that aren't in your hometown.
Oh, great. Easy. I'm writing about a place right now in Austin that has been one of my favorite restaurants for a while. And it still is. I go there every time I go to Austin. It's called Dai Due. And this guy does fun and inventive stuff with game meat.
Dai Due?
Yeah, D-A-I-D-U-E.
Okay.
So kind of like Dai Du, but it's pronounced Dai Due, I think. And he has some of the best charcuterie boards I've ever had. He is like really good at like serving wild hog and antelope in a way that's like, I always describe it as, it's a direct response to people that would be like, I don't do game meat, or I think it tastes gamey. There's none of that. It's just really good.
I've never noticed anything tasting gamey. I've never really.
I mean, if you get like, sometimes if it's not cooked right, or you know, if you have venison meat from someone's garage, sure.
I always feel like that what they're saying by gamey is it's not super fatty.
Oh, like lean.
Because things are very lean. You know, wild animals tend to be a lot more lean.
That's true, but while that is true, I think that it can imply flavor, and sometimes it does. You know, like goat cheese even has a little bit of a funk to it. You know, goat meat, you know, it tastes a little more of the earth than say just like the sterilized and Clorox ground beef that you got from the grocery store. You know, Daijue is amazing, and it's one of my favorite restaurants. And then out here, I like Alimento a lot. It's an Italian restaurant, kind of. They serve pasta, but they do one of my favorite dishes, which is chili pork ribs with coleslaw. It's like with like a coleslaw, almonds, and then they put a homemade ranch on it. And it's so bizarre for an Italian restaurant to do that, but it works. And I've always admired specifically that dish that I was just like, oh, then everything must be good. And it is, as far as I've had. So Alimento is really good.
What about you've given me two places that you have lived in or live in. So in that regard, what I'm looking for is I want to know something where like you've traveled to a restaurant, you've traveled somewhere, you were in Montreal or New York or St. Louis or something like that. And a place just knocked you out.
New Orleans. I ate some of the best food of my life. I was there, over the new year. And there's a place called Barrett's. People kept telling me the catfish was good. And then I tried the fried catfish and I was like, this is the best fried catfish I've ever had. And their potato salad is on a bed of pickles that I was just like, I love that.
Oh, that's hell yeah.
But their catfish is just, it's cornmeal fried. It's just so damn tender and kind of falls apart, but well seasoned. And I've had a lot of catfish living in Austin, and I've been to New Orleans and I've had catfish, and this is like the best catfish I've had. The other thing that I will say is that if you drive from New Orleans to Texas, you make a stop in Lafayette,
Louisiana.
I think you pronounced it correctly.
Down on the bayou, Lafayette, Louisiana. You get a nice gumbo, and we have a fricassee.
There's a place called Best Stop, and they serve pork cracklings. You get them in like a little bag, and it's just so damn fatty and crispy, and it's like just like off of a highway.
It's deep fried skin, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Pork cracklings and their jerky is insane. They're like beef jerky is just like tender and spicy and delicious. The South is where it's at, man. I mean, that's where a lot of the good food is.
That's why they're so fat, because 100%. Their food is so good. I could never live in the South, because I couldn't survive that food. It's so good. I used to go to summer in North Carolina. It's not a big deal. Now, I used to go to North Carolina to visit my brother who lived out there for a while. And we used to go to this really great seafood spot, and its name, and I love saying the name of this place because it's so great, is Sanitary Fish Market.
Hilarious.
That was their name.
Sanitary.
And they've been around for long enough where that name meant something.
Hey, nothing to worry about here. Restaurant. Yeah.
They're really big on t-shirts. That was like their big thing. They had a lot of t-shirts.
But oh, wow.
I used to go down there and you'd get like hush puppies with honey, and you're just sitting there and you're like, I'm just gaining weight while I eat this, but it's so f-ing good.
But it's more acceptable to be of a healthy weight there.
I think it's also more acceptable nowadays to be a healthier weight. And,
I think so.
And that's great. But for me,
yeah,
not happening.
It would be a problem.
I can't do it. I can't do it. I would, it would get bad for me real fast. Real fast.
Yeah, I get that. Those are two places that I love. Barrett's and Best Stop.
So,
and I'm sure there's more, but the South, man.
If you could live in a city that isn't one of the three that we've discussed, where, so if it wasn't Austin, so you're not in Austin, or you're not in LA, or you're not in the Pittsburgh area.
Oh, that's tough. You know, maybe Portland, just because
Oregon.
Yeah, dude, the Northwest is so beautiful. And as somebody that, like, you know, I've recently gotten into foraging and stuff, and like mushrooms, and there's just such a lush scene there, and it rain. I mean, it would be great for that. It's gorgeous. The Northwest is like beautiful. But also, if the big one ever does come, you know, that's a place that's going to get the worst, right?
Oh yeah,
it's above that fault line. Yeah. So I'm just like, maybe not. But as far as just like a base value, gorgeous place, you know, like when I'm there, I'm like, it's kind of like Pennsylvania. It's green. It's as green as Pennsylvania in a different way, but it's got everything. It's got the forest vibe, but it's also got the ocean. It seems like a real chill place.
Hmm. I like that. I'm going to ask you a couple of questions, and these are going to be personal preferences. All right.
Yeah.
You would rather have a Philly cheesesteak, a Italian beef from Chicago, or a lobster roll from Maine?
Oh, damn.
You can only pick one.
I'll tell you the one thing I know for sure, confidently, is the cheesesteak's out.
Is it because cheesesteaks taste pretty much the same everywhere you go?
Yeah.
I've never understood that aspect of it.
I think lobster roll, just because it's such a pleasure. I mean, a classic Italian beef is amazing, but would I rather have? I mean, if I could afford it and it's good, lobster roll all day, all day.
Yeah. Do you ever go to Cousins Maine Lobster in West Hollywood, or go to their truck?
No, it's good.
It's good. And it's good. And it is Maine Lobster, so they do a pretty good job.
Ooh, okay.
All right. Pizza from New York, Chicago, or Detroit?
Oh. Ooh. Just as in the style of pizza?
Like, if you were to get, like, the best slice from either of those three cities.
Yeah. I might surprise people with this one. I mean, you'll find good Italian pizza in New York, but I consider that to be Italian. And, like, a New York slice is, like, a little greasier and thin.
Mm-hmm.
I like Detroit-style pizza. And there's some good places in Austin that do it, and there's good places here that do it. And it's kind of in between. Like, if you think like Chicago's like too filling, like deep dish, but you still want something kind of Midwestern and substantial, then Detroit style's for you. I like Detroit style. Personal preference.
There's a reason I chose Detroit style, and that's because I think that might be my preferred.
Sneaker. Yeah, it sneaks up on you. It's good. It's very good.
What people don't know about where I'm from is that we didn't really access Italian pizza. We had Greek pizza. And Greek pizza is a totally different style of pizza. It's a cold, it's a cold pressed dough. So you actually press the dough into the pan and then refrigerate it. And then you take it in, like, you will literally put like the cheese and the pasta sauce on it, put it in the refrigerator, get it ready. And then when people order it, you take your shit out and then you get it, you know, do whatever.
Well, there's all the toppings. Lots of people that think the best pizza in the country is in Mass. It's in Massachusetts.
Oh, do you mean, and like Regina and San Tarpio's tend to be the two in Boston.
They think it's like amazing. And I'm like, okay, interesting. I've never been, so I don't know. I'd love to.
Regina is great. It's actually the worst is at when you go the day, I made the mistake of going out there the day after the marathon.
Yeah. Oh,
and let me tell you, the line was probably about a quarter of a mile out the door.
Wow.
It was so wild, but it was just everybody was in town and they had to get it.
Wow.
I would say that Massachusetts pizza is fine.
Okay.
I'm not a big pizza snob.
Me neither.
In like the way of like when people are like, there's no good pizza in LA. It's like there's like five good places I could name right now where it's fine.
There's a lot more coming, and there's a lot more that popped up in the last year. Speaking of LA pizza, Hail Mary, good. That's really good. That's an Atwater Village. Go to Hail Mary.
Hail Mary?
Yeah.
All right.
Great pizza.
I'm not going to say no to that. There are local places that I very much enjoy. You know what I've really gotten into since coming out here? Ricotta on a pizza.
Oh yeah. That's great.
Oh, pepperoni and ricotta. What a dream. Ooh. What a dream combo on a slice of pizza. Okay. More questions. Barbecue from Kansas City.
Yeah.
Memphis. Carolina. Or Austin.
Oh wow, interesting.
I allowed Austin to get onto this list. I didn't want it to go onto the list because I didn't want you to have a skewed experience of living there a time.
I don't think I've had barbecue in Memphis, but flavor wise, I like what happens in Carolina. I like vinegar based sauces. Mm-hmm. I like pulled pork, but you know. Austin, Franklin's Barbecue, even if you count Black's, which is a little bit outside of the city, but the good Texas barbecue. I like Central Texas barbecue is still very good. Franklin's is still very good. So although my tastes lie with probably Carolina, I'm going to go Austin because I like Franklin's and it lives up to the hype and it still does.
That might be why I didn't want to put Austin onto that list. Yeah, so let's wipe Austin off that list and we'll ask again. KC barbecue, Memphis barbecue, or Carolina barbecue?
Carolina.
Style.
Carolina.
Carolina barbecue. So you like that style. That dry, or that vinegary, non-sauce?
Well, the side sauces are really good. It's my favorite type of barbecue sauce. I love vinegar, dude. Mm. I love vinegar. And that, you know, thin vinegary sauce is tops for me. I love that. I love it. So I go Carolina. I'll go Carolina.
I ended up, you know, because I used to go to Carolina all the time.
Yeah.
Not impressed by the barbecue.
Yeah. I can't name the places that I've been to off the top of my head, but I mean, there's obviously really good barbecue there.
Yeah. I've always
a lot of mediocre barbecue there too.
Sure. I've really enjoyed Kansas City barbecue.
Okay.
And I've stood by and enjoyed that a lot, and that's great. Okay. So you ready for this next one?
Yeah, I got it.
McDonald's, Burger King, or Wendy's?
Oh, well, all fast food should probably be burned to the ground, but McDonald's, if only because their breakfast, I think, offers more than maybe the other places as a whole. I mean, like an Egg McMuffin. The crispy sleeve of hash browns. Those are iconic.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, listen, I'm shooting a good percentage on McDonald's French fries. I know sometimes people get them and they're cold or whatever, but when they get served to me, I feel like most of the time they're good, and a properly cooked McDonald's French fry is pretty high up on the list of French fries.
Really?
So I'm going to go McDonald's. There's nothing for Wendy's that I really crave outside of a Frosty. If I had to rank them, I would say McDonald's, Wendy's, Burger King.
Oof. Boy, are we are diametrically opposed.
I was never a Burger King person.
God, you know what? Give me a Whopper, man. The flavor palette of a Whopper to me is just so damn good. I think one of the things about a Burger King burger that is actually weird is that it tastes artificially like it's off the grill because of how they cook it.
Oh yeah.
Like it tastes like an actual burger you'd have at a house.
They use liquid smoke or something.
I think people reject that. I think they reject that like false homemade flavor in Burger King as opposed to, you know, because with McDonald's doesn't taste like a burger. It tastes like McDonald's.
It tastes like McDonald's.
Yeah.
It tastes like a sandwich.
And to me, Wendy's has that as well. But there's something about Burger King where it's like you show up and it smells like, outside of a McDonald's, it smells like a CVS. Like, you can't smell what's going on outside of a McDonald's. But if you're within a mile of a Burger King, you're just like, there's a Burger King nearby. I can smell it. And that is...
I couldn't even tell you what a Whopper tastes like. It's been so long since I've had it.
Danny, I'm going to tell you something. We are going to go to a Burger King. And I'm going to buy you a Whopper. We'll go.
I'm excited.
We'll set up like a movie date. And
I love it.
And we'll go to the Back to the Future Burger King, the one from the one in Burbank. We'll go to there and we will sit down and I will show you the wonderful flavor palette of a mediocre fast food burger.
I need to try it for my palate and my experience. I need to have a Whopper.
Yeah. They did one. It comes back every once in a while, but called the Angry Whopper. Okay. And it was legitimately my favorite fast food item that's ever existed. Sorry.
Spicy? Is it just spicy?
It was spicy in different ways. So they had like a tangy sauce, but they also had a sweet heat on it. And they also had like deep fried onion petals and pickled jalapenos on it.
Okay. Interesting.
It was a delight.
Okay.
And I fantasize about that burger.
I'd be willing to try it.
You are, because I would call you an accomplished food writer. You've published some great stuff, blah, blah, blah. You get the whole thing. I want to talk about food trends that have popped up in the past decade or so. And I want to know what you think about it's hard for me to really put my thumb on them because I don't study them the way that you might, but what do you think is the most overrated and underrated sort of trends in food over the past decade or so?
Oh, wow. Overrated might be chicken sandwiches. Everyone's doing now. It's sometimes if the chicken's good enough, you can just get rid of the bread and I'll be fine. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I don't need the sandwich to be there. You know, it's weird because I want to say that Nashville hot chicken is overrated because they're popping up so much here in LA, but I do like them. So I'm like, is it so overrated that it is underrated?
I saw a great tweet. I think it was by like David Dorward or something. He goes, I don't want to sound controversial, but does Los Angeles need this many Dave's hot chickens?
Yeah, there's a ton. Ironically enough, there's this place called Daver that does one of my favorite things is their hot chicken sandwich. It's Sichuan fried. So they use the Sichuan peppercorn, which if you haven't had it, is just... It's hot, but people describe it as being electric. It's got such a good, unique flavor to it that it's spicy, yes, but it's packed with flavor. And it's one of the best sandwiches I've ever had. No. And it's a hot chicken sandwich. And so Sichuan food, I know that's like a whole culture, but you know, if we start seeing more trends like that in LA, I'd be very happy with.
Okay, well, great. So it's funny. I want to go back to when you said the chicken sandwiches, and I'm going to agree with you to the point of being like, have we not been doing this for like 60 years? Chicken, right. Like the fact that everyone's just losing their, like the fact that Popeyes was like, oh, we're out of chicken now for the sandwich. And it's like, did you guys just hear about Popeyes?
Yeah. Just now?
Like, it blows my mind. And the other thing too is like Chick-fil-A, when people are like, I gotta go. And it's like, it's like, oh, I don't know if you knew this, but every place on the planet has a chicken sandwich. And they're as good as Chick-fil-A.
Very overrated. Underrated as far as food trends? I don't know, man. Maybe it feels like poke came and went. It feels like the poke bowl came and went, but I still think there's more there. The idea is great. It is. You know, is it Hawaiian? Is it, you know, East Asian? I don't know exactly what culture it does come from originally, but you know, fresh fish cured in a bowl like ceviche. I think there's more there, and it was always good. If done right, it's always good.
It's Hawaiian.
It's Hawaiian. Okay.
It is a Hawaiian dish, but you're right. Like poke is interesting to me because it's sort of like a make your own sushi salad kind of a thing.
Yeah, and basically, and it takes all the best parts of like, raw fish and citrus is amazing. Mm-hmm. So ceviche and poke and all that. really good. You know what's something that you like that I don't know if it's reached trend status, but I can see it happening, is a meatloaf sandwich. I don't know that we've necessarily reached trend status yet.
It's already a trend in my life. Have I not told you about it? There is a place called the New Deal on Magnolia. They have a meatloaf sandwich that I get a fried egg added to it. I will send you a picture because I recently posted it on Instagram. It is one of the most amazing things. That a meatloaf sandwich with an egg on it, so good.
It's on my list, and couldn't you see a meatloaf sandwich happening at McDonald's, Popeyes, whatever the hell? It seems ripe for that. It'd be easy to produce.
I don't know if meatloaf. Do you think that like the effort for making the way that these fast food places make their sandwiches, do you think meatloaf would be worth the effort to them? It seems more
Feels like one of those things that you can still make in a factory and make. It seems like one of those things you could mass produce.
It's hard to have bad meatloaf. I think the only time you really end up with a bad piece of meatloaf is when the consistency is bad and it's essentially like you're eating like a large meatball. That's the only time meatloaf doesn't work for me.
That's true. That's true.
Okay, a couple of yes or no questions. In and out. Yes or no?
God, no in between, huh? Yes. In and out, yes. Because their burger is so damn good.
All right.
So gets a big yes for me.
Taco Bell.
No.
Delta?
No? Not only no, never.
Really? What is it about Taco Bell where is it just, is it more of like a cultural thing or?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it was the only Mexican food in my hometown. And since I've discovered other things, I think I'm more so like, I'm never going back. If I had an opposite experience where I grew up with any sort of culture and had an avocado before the age of 26, maybe I would be like, I could see the beauty in it, but like, no.
Taco Bell to me seems like sort of like the Wild West of fast food, where they come out with the most random shit. They're like, how about a Mountain Dew flavored taco? And I'm like, you know what? I'll give it a try. Because I appreciate it.
I appreciate your craziness.
Yeah. Raisins, yes or no?
Ooh. Yes, because they're used for bad a lot, but other cultures don't have a problem using them correctly. It's like an American thing to use them poorly.
What is
seeing them in chicken salads and and like places that I don't think they belong.
Like what? Like so, chicken salad. Where? What else?
Oh, where they don't belong. I guess really any salad. But you know, like you'll see them pop up in like curries and like I'm trying to think of where else you would see them. But sometimes they can be cooked in savory dishes and be good. But the way that we kind of use them for like mayo-based salads, I don't like.
Yeah. Okay. Ready? Insect protein. Yes or no?
Wait. Insect protein?
Yeah.
Yes. Although I don't do that. I would. But saying no would be like.
You don't want to be a racist. I get it.
It'd be a very Western view of things. So.
Yeah. But also, I don't think. I will say this. It's not wrong or right to have a visceral reaction to something.
No.
It's not like it's not your fault if something makes you gag at the idea of eating it.
I will also say, hey, the way climate change is going, we should probably all get used to eating insects.
That's kind of why I asked.
So, you know, eat your insects, Bobby.
Yeah. Impossible meat.
Yes.
Yeah. Have you?
Yeah. Eaten it? I don't know. I don't think I have a problem with it.
Have you had it?
Yeah, I have. I've had an Impossible Burger, and it seems okay enough. I don't hate vegan food. And if it's getting people to eat less meat, then it is inherently a good thing, in my opinion.
That's fair enough. If you could travel anywhere to eat anything, where and what?
Oh, God.
Like someplace you've never been, like you want to eat you know.
Can it be a place that I've had a meal before?
I don't want, no, I want you to go somewhere. I want you to want something at a specific place, and it's a specific item. Doesn't even have to be known for it, but.
And I've never been there?
Correct. Like a wish list kind of a thing.
Okay. Oof. Al Pastor Tacos in Mexico City.
Oh, yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. I mean, it's like Mexico City as a whole, but like, I feel like getting Al Pastor Tacos there.
That seems very doable, Danny.
No, for sure.
We're like 6 hours from there.
That's true. Oh, Christ.
Yeah, he's there too.
Authentic.
They love him there.
Lebanese food. Going to Lebanon and eating food there would be a dream.
Like Beirut?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be precarious, but, you know.
It's part of the flavor. Part of the flavor is the fact that a giant explosion could hit you at any time.
Part of the flavor. And I'm also going to throw in, just the most expensive, can't afford it, 3 Michelin starred restaurant in Spain. You know, man. Like that's where they all are. And that's where like a lot of them are. And they have probably the highest standard for food outside of the French, probably more than the French at this point. They have like the highest concentration of Michelin starred restaurants. So if I ever get a load of money, just going there and eating some lavish meal in Spain would be tops.
Give me your top 3 people you want to cook for.
Oh, wow.
I'm bombarding you with a lot of very quick answer questions because I have a lot. I had a lot that I wanted to go through, and I'm interested because you have, in my opinion, what I would say would be the most refined palate of anybody I know and a lot the most food experience of anybody I know.
I feel like the people that I would want to cook for are dead.
Okay, give me an example.
Bourdain would be having Bourdain over for like a dinner.
Did you ever meet him?
Never did.
The nicest guy, dude.
You did, right?
Let me rephrase it. He wasn't like nice in a way where you'd be like, oh, that person was so kind. He was just good at being a person. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I worked for him and with him and you know, it's not my, it's not, this episode's not about me. Or anything like that. Okay. But I know we did just sort of celebrate the anniversary of his passing.
I'll give you Owen Wilson.
Wow. Hey, wow. Just this sandwich is fantastic.
Imagine having Owen Wilson over for dinner. How fun that would be.
His reactions would be so great to the food.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He would be a damn delight. And then I'll say, God, there's like people whose brains I want to pick. There's that Netflix show, High on the Hog, that explores the history of American cooking. That pretty much that it is, you know, African and African-American cooking. Mm-hmm. And it never really got its due, which is something that most people know. You just haven't really seen many shows about it. The guy who hosted, Stephen Satterfield, I was very taken by him as just a... it's completely caring and studious human being. I was very enamored with him as a person, and I would love to have a meal with him. So cooking for him would mean a lot. So he's on there, the host of that show. I love that guy. And then I don't know. I'm trying to think of somebody that I have a crush on in Hollywood.
Oh, that's you're hedging your bets here.
The third one it would be something like that, like ScarJo or something. You know, without Colin Jost there.
No, you don't want him there. You don't want him there also enjoying that. He's got enough privilege. He shouldn't be able. Yeah. He shouldn't be allowed to enjoy your. That works. An engaged or married woman. I don't know what her situation is, but that's.
No. Yeah.
Danny, you snake in the grass. Okay. So if you could tell the listeners to learn one meal to cook for other people, what would it be? You say have this in your back pocket as something to either impress or just always be able to sort of kill the crowd with. What would it be? And people take and then give some advice for them on how to prepare it if you know that.
Yeah. So for me, I don't think there's anything more romantic than fresh pasta.
Especially on a first date.
Yeah.
Yeah, get it all in your guts.
You can eat a little bit of pasta. Just a little bit,
yeah. So what kind of pasta would you suggest?
I would say, are we talking about a date night?
I mean, sure, but like just like all around.
All around.
So like if everybody could know how to cook one thing.
Cook one thing. I mean, if you can learn how to make fresh pasta, I think that is an incredible thing to have in your back pocket. Just speaking from experience, and yeah, I'm close to it. It has consistently wowed people. So it's a thing that is impressive to others. And so you're always going to have that. Whereas some things you cook, you learn how to cook a steak. It's cool. That's good. But I don't know if there's anything more impressive than forming dough and shaping it. It's very artistic. And I'm sure, every culture has their own type of noodle or dumpling or something. And
that's not
for
true.
Me, yeah,
that's a lie.
There's for me, it's like a fresh pasta. Learn how to make pappardelle because you can make it by hand. And you don't necessarily need a machine to do it, but it helps. But making pappardelle, and this is not sustainable, but a pappardelle bolognese, nice, wavy, egg yolk rich pasta, and then just a full bodied, cooked in a Dutch oven for 4 hours meat sauce is one of the most gluttonous things you can eat. And yeah, it's going to put you down a little bit, but if you really want to have sex afterwards, you still will. You'll make it happen.
It'll just be a little more gross.
This will just be a little more gross, which is already gross and shameful, and you're going to hell. So
yeah, yeah. Like, why would you even be doing this? Are you married before you gave that bolognese? Because I hate to break it to you, but
pappardelle bolognese. That's what I would say.
Okay. See, that's why I asked. That's important. Pappardelle bolognese. And then my final official question for you is: you are about to be put to death for your heinous crimes.
Yes.
You monster.
We all know what I did.
We know what you did, and people are going to be writing about it for decades. The 4-part Netflix documentary about your heinous crimes will be the talk of the town.
Yeah.
And you are granted one final meal of anything you want.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Before you are put to your agonizing death and go to hell.
Okay. Well, when you make it sound like that, it's like I would be eating something completely reckless, like a $3 million burger or something, because I'm like, I don't care. I'm going to hell. I'll say this. If I was about to die, I know what meal I would want to have, something that would evoke emotion and be reflective. The dish would be linguine and clams, because that dish has a lot of history and emotion packed into it. It makes me think of family and my brother and my life spent as a line cook. And I feel very connected to that dish. It's a dish that makes me feel connected to family.
Before everything went wrong.
Before everything, before I took up murder. And I would pick linguine and clams. But if I was just some sort of senseless narcissist, I would probably be like, just give me a big, a charcuterie board the size of my apartment, and I'll just eat until it kills me.
Yeah.
I'll ingest so much salt that I go into cardiac arrest.
Yeah, like renal failure or something like that. Yeah.
100%. I wouldn't even get to the chair. I would have a kidney failure.
You're like, I want a water glass full of unpopped popcorn kernels, and I want the chair.
I have a full glass of canola oil.
Yeah. Just have that happen. And well, that's fantastic. I love that. I wish I could. I mean, we're creeping up on an hour and a half here, and that's gets to be close to too long for a podcast on things. But of course, I have a bevy more of things I want to know, not only about you, on behalf of the audience, of course, because I know enough. So that being said, I'm going to have you do your plugs. But what I will say before that is I'm going to plug for you on your behalf. Good Morning, Mister. The comedy album by Danny Palumbo released last year. My favorite of the year. It was so funny. My roommate is obsessed with it, too. She thinks it's so damn funny. So definitely please find that. Danny, where can we find that?
Great. You can listen, if you want to listen to it for free, it's on Spotify.
No.
Buy it. Spotify, because I just want people to find it. I'm not worried about the money. Just go listen to it. The more people that find it, the better it'll be for me. If you want to pay for it, you can buy it on iTunes, but whatever is more convenient for you, I just want people to listen to it. So you can find it there. You can follow me on Instagram at Palumbros, Palumbros. I have a food podcast with James Austin Johnson, very funny comedian. It's called The Macaroni Zone.
He blew up with his Trump impressions and all his all the stuff he's done. He exploded.
He's one of the best impressionists out there today.
Yeah.
And he loves food. And we talk about it, and he does some good impressions in the pod. And, you know, I sell pasta out of my apartment on Sundays. But if you follow me on Instagram, I mean, that's the only one I'm using. And that's where I'm promoting all my projects and doing videos and stuff. And, you know, that's a good start.
I would add that definitely to Danny on Instagram. It is pure food. And he also posts about all of your writings and stuff. And if you are in the Los Angeles area, do yourself a favor and learn where Danny lives by buying food from him on Sundays.
Yeah,
it is a damn delight. And I know you're only doing it for a few more weeks before you are gone for a little while.
I think I'm going to keep doing it.
You should.
I'm going to take a week off for July 4th because it's on a Sunday.
Oh, no, you should not do that. That's un-American.
Stay open for July 4th. Who wants to eat pasta on the 4th of July?
You should make
my family. That's who.
Hot dog pasta.
Hot dog pasta. Oh, there we go. Big seller.
You're like, I put spaghetti and butter. It's spaghetti and with ketchup. Butter and hot dogs.
It's for 7-year-olds.
It's actually just a can of SpaghettiOs with a sliced Franks in them. That's what it is. Happy America. Danny, thank you again so much. Make sure you follow Danny. And if he's ever live in your city, go see him because he's so damn funny. Except for those times that he bombs in Austin. Of course, on my end, you can follow me on social media at Hey There Jeffro on Twitter and Instagram. On Facebook, don't find me. That's not for you. You don't get that. That's for my mom, and I don't want you to know who my mom is. Leave her alone. You can also check out Tom and Jeff Watch Batman on the Gamefully Unemployed Patreon. You can check out You Don't Even Like Sports and Unpopular Opinion, both on the Unpopular Opinion Network. Thank you all so much. If you liked this show and you're listening for free and you want to come over to the Patreon, patreon.com/JeffMay. You get your episodes a week early and all the naughty words are in there. Thank you all to all of my patrons. You are so fantastic. I love each and every one of you. Danny, thank you, buddy. I love each and every one of you, Danny Palumbo, for being on the show. You were such a delight. And thank you all for listening. And we'll see you in 2 weeks. Okay, bye. All right. Hey everyone, our artwork is created by Justin T. Brown, who can be found at Artness by Justin Brown on Instagram, as well as artnessbyjustinbrown.com. That dope music you heard is by Troy Nababon, available at Troy Nababon on Instagram, as well as at troynababon.com. Nababon is spelled N-A-B-A-B-A-N, and boy, does that shred. Thank you all so much for listening. See you next time.